This is Ian Pickus for WAMC News, and joining us now is one of our commentators, Blair Horner. He's executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, and some sad news to talk about today, Blair. The former longtime New York State Assemblyman Richard Brodsky has died, apparently, related to COVID-19. Give us your memories of first meeting Assemblyman Brodsky and what you're thinking about today.
Well, I'm shocked and deeply saddened that he was such a giant in the legislature for so many years. It was hard to imagine the legislature without him, and now it's going to be hard to imagine him about the planet without him. It was very sad and shocking news. He's always had this reputation, well deserved, as being an extremely smart, very capable, knew the details of policy, and hyper aggressive legislator. He was viewed as a bulldog when he was advocating his own issues. And my first interaction with him, at least that I can recall, was back in the 1980s. And he had his reputation then too, although he's a backbencher in those days. And I was going in to see him on an issue dealing with higher education. And when I went in, it was so funny. There was classical music playing in the background. He asked me if I wanted some hot tea. It was the most relaxed, interesting meeting. And he was, he's well briefed, knew the issue, extremely articulate, and asked good questions. But the actual feeling in the room was extremely calming. And that wasn't the only time that ever happened with me. But certainly, when he was not in his office, or even sometimes when it was much more of a frantic pace, much more freewheeling. Much more willing to engage and debate. He would debate anything, even if you agreed with him. He was a formidable legislator. He's the type of legislator that New Yorkers should want to have at the state capitol.
You know, he ran for attorney general twice, and that might tell us a little bit about where his interests were. It seems like he had a lot of overlap with issues that you care about and your organization cares about in terms of consumer rights, the environment, and things like that.
Yeah, he ran for attorney general twice. I believe the first time when he dropped out, it could have been the second time, he did to donate his kidney to his daughter, and that was why he curbed his campaign. He knew that he was smart. He was, again, a formidable policy person and very aggressive in his advocacy. And so we dealt with him a lot on environmental issues. He was a longtime chair of the Environmental Conservation Committee. And so all things environment would often come his way. But because he had such a broad understanding of issues, he was involved in everything. And so, for example, there's an authorities budget office now that monitors state and local public authorities, these quasi-government entities. And it was really a lot of his advocacy that made that happen. The first time I dealt with him in the 1980s, he was pushing for tighter regulation on proprietary schools, or those are schools where often really like trade schools. And he was involved in a very fierce battle to enhance regulation of those institutions. So He was involved in a lot of issues. He had a curious mind. He was very smart, extremely articulate, and as I mentioned, in case I forgot, aggressive about his perspective.
Did you guys ever knock heads about something?
Well, again, even if you were agreeing with him, sometimes you'd knock heads because that was the way he sort of, I think the way he viewed the world. He was a warrior, and that came out in all different aspects. Now, that's not to say he was always difficult to deal with, although often he was. As I mentioned before, the first meeting I had with him was a relaxed meeting where I was sipping tea, listening to classical music. And so he had this sort of Renaissance part of his personality. He was involved in, I think it was ranching out in Montana as well. So he had this sort of wide-ranging views of issues. He had a mind that was curious about a lot of different things, and he was a very effective legislator as a result. He was constantly on the floor debating. He did his homework, and he pushed hard. So, I mean, that's, you know, if you live in a representative democracy, you want your representatives to go to the state capitol and to do things, and he did it.
Let me get you on a news of the day thing. Governor Cuomo said the other day that given the coronavirus and the last-ditch budget that was passed in the dead of night, that effectively the legislative session is over. Now, it had been scheduled to go until June. Number one, what's left on the table in your mind? And number two, is it a good idea for lawmakers to just fold up the tent here?
Well, the second question is the easiest. The short answer is legislators should come to Albany and do their jobs. And if they have to do it virtually as compared to physically, then that's what they should do. I mean, no one would ask anyone to unnecessarily put their health at risk. But the legislature was able to figure out how to pass a budget under these circumstances. They certainly can deal with legislation. Typically, in a typical legislative session, hundreds of bills get passed, and many of them are issues that lots of people care about. And so certainly NYPARC has across the board agenda of items that we care about, but there are lots of issues all over the place that are not related to the budget that people care a lot about. One of the ones that gets talked about the most is, what do you do about allowing for recreational use of marijuana, for example? And it's been on the table now for a few years in a row. The governor said he wasn't going to do a budget unless it was included. It wasn't. What does that mean? Nothing gets done. So the legislature is scheduled to be here through June. We expect that they will, even if they're going to do it in a new and virtual way.
Governor Cuomo also said today that any New Yorker who wants to vote by absentee ballot in the June 23rd primaries, which are now a combined election day with the April presidential primary moved to June, can do so in order to limit people gathering, to stand in line to vote. Do you think that this pandemic will maybe show us the way to a new statewide mail-in, no-fault absentee situation for elections going forward?
Well, I think the pandemic will accelerate where we were going anyway. I mean, the legislature last year passed a constitutional amendment that eliminated the requirement that you'd have to have an excuse to get an absentee ballot. But since it's a constitutional amendment, it has to have passage of two successive legislatures and then put the voters to decide. And that would be the earliest that would have happened. That would have been November 2021. So what the governor is saying today is that he's interpreting one of the allowable excuses in the state constitution, which is illness, to apply to a pandemic. We think he's right to want to do that. And we applaud the governor's taking that step. We certainly hope that that's the case, that New Yorkers don't have to put their health at risk in order to cast their ballot. This is voluntary, of course. People don't have to get an absentee ballot if they don't want to, or in this case, primarily, I assume, Democrats for the presidential, but there are special elections that are included in this, and there are primaries for congressional and state legislative races as well. So there's a number of issues. It really impacts Democrats the most, because most of the primaries, if they occur, will be on the presidential side, although maybe the presidential primary won't be so exciting come June, given that Senator Sanders has bowed out. Nevertheless, we think that mail-in voting has an enormous amount of promise as a way to deal with elections going forward, whether you have a pandemic or not. The state of Oregon, which has done this now for many years, has one of the highest voter participation rates in the country. And our view is it's a constitutional right, it's not a privilege, that government policy should be, how do you make it as easy as possible for people to use their right? And certainly mailing in the ballot is an easy way to do that.
That's Blair Horner. He's executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group and a WAMC commentator. Blair, thank you so much for taking some time for us today. Appreciate it.
Great talking to you, Ian.